98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Burns and Gambo, the 4 o'clock reset. 4 o'clock reset.
Here is what we have been talking about all day long, and we crammed it all into one segment. We call it the 4 o'clock reset here on the Burns and Gambo show, so you know this is where you go every day to get our takes on everything going on in sports. And we start with Major League Baseball. Last night's Game 5 of the American League Divisional Series. Tyler Glasnow. Yep, I saw the tape, and yep, it was pretty obvious. I was tipping my pitches in that first inning.
I went back and looked, and it was pretty obvious as far as the tips go. But again, like, I'm not going to say that's the reason why. Like, I left some pitches that were there to hit, like, over the middle of the plate, and they're really good hitters, and they can do things with, I don't care how hard you throw, they're good hitters. So I don't know if that's what it was, but when I look back, it was pretty obvious.
Yeah, major league hitters, if they know the difference between a fastball and a curveball, it's a really good chance they're going to be able to hit you.
Yep.
And they knew the difference, and they were talking about it. There's no question that he was tipping his pitches, and it cost him in that first inning, for sure.
Gerrit Cole struck out 10 last night over his 8 innings, 2 hits, 1 run that he allowed. His run of dominance has absolutely been astounding since May 22nd. He is 18-0, 1.66 ERA, 251 strikeouts. That includes what he's done in the playoffs. It's been extraordinary. Coming up in moments, really, the National League Championship Series, Game 1. Here's Jessica Mendoza from ESPN talking about the Cardinals and the Nationals.
So you just look at basically both of these teams being the underdogs, not the favorites, you know, don't have as many of the stars, even though they definitely do have some, but they weren't the teams that were talked about throughout the entire season. And both have similar stories in that they didn't start off that strong. And neither one, you know, had their division. I mean, the Nationals didn't even win it. The Cardinals, it took all the way to the very last game to even win the Central. So it wasn't like they were dominant by any means throughout the regular season. But here we are in the championship series.
Anibal Sanchez versus Miles Michaelis, the matchup tonight. This game's set to begin any minute.
Interesting nugget. Daniel Hudson, and I spoke with Huddy right after they had closed out that series and won that game. And he said, I'm coming back to Phoenix the next day, and his wife's going to have a baby. They're going to induce. The baby took a little bit longer to come out, even with the inducing. He is not there for game one. They put him on paternity leave. So the Nationals closer, Daniel Hudson, the former D-back, is not going to be there for game one. He's here in Phoenix with his wife. They're having their third child. He thought he was going to be able to make it back for game one, but it took a little bit longer to have the baby, so he's going to miss the first game.
Obviously, the threesome of Strasburg, Scherzer, and Corbin going to be a big key to the Nationals. Their numbers were extraordinary in the series, aside from that one inning that Corbin threw in relief. Those three were very, very good in that game. Something to consider. Paul Goldschmidt, great numbers in the NLDS in their series against the Braves. Marcell Ozuna has really good numbers against Scherzer and Strasburg in his career. Very, very good numbers. Something to consider there. Congratulations to the Arizona Coyotes. Their first win of the season last night. They beat the Vegas Golden Knights.
It's a good win. Knights are a good team.
4-1 their fifth overall pick from a year ago, center Barrett Hayden. He had a very nice night last night as well.
His line did well. He had an assist in the game. Congratulations to him. His line did well. Nice 4-1 win. They got great goaltending out of Darcy Kemper.
37 saves.
Yeah, we're able to get that first win. They're playing Colorado tonight.
Yes. Mike Leach, the coach of Wazoo, getting his team ready for ASU. Last week, Utah's defense stymied that high-power Cougar offense. When he looks across the field at ASU's defense, does he see a defense that reminds him of the Utes? No.
I don't know. I mean, I could make something up, but not really. They're a little different than that. You know, they feel good about their defensive line. They do play off you, but then in certain situations, they're very aggressive. They play man. They blitz more than Utah does.
Seriously, I'm nominating that for soundbite of the month. That
would make
fantastic.
Something up for you guys. Throw something against the wall. Give you some gibberish.
Soundbite.
Yeah, they do a really good job. They pressure the quarterback well. They do a good job of stopping the run. They got good cover guys. I can make something up with just gibberish that you guys could go with, but it doesn't mean anything.
The marquee shiny matchup is obviously Wazoo's offense versus ASU's defense, both among the best in the country. The sneaky matchup to watch here, can ASU's offense get healthy against a god-awful Washington State defense? Because they are one of the worst in the country.
I think Jaden Daniels has been improving week after week. I loved this game last time out. I mean, I think he's I think he's a super talented guy. He's got good wide receivers. I really want to see Eno Benjamin get going and have that great game that he's very capable of. And I need ASU's defense in this game to really cut down on allowing the big plays. They've given up 19 plays of 20 yards or more so far this season.
From the Arizona Cardinals today, David Johnson certainly sounding like a guy who's going to be ready to play Sunday against the Falcons. He was able to practice fully today, in his own words.
Yeah, I was able to do everything, participate in practice, and did a good job.
Said the back is fine.
It was just tight. Just felt tight, but now it's gone. I'm good to go.
And was asked what he can do to make sure he plays on Sunday.
Treatment and continue to move around. And, you know, when game time comes around, be as fully good as I can be.
And on the injury report, he is listed as questionable. Cliff Kingsbury said today, Gambo, that David Johnson, Christian Kirk, Terrell Suggs, all listed as game time decisions, though David Johnson clearly sounded like a guy who thought he was going to play on
Sunday.
Yeah,
I said yesterday, I feel really good about him playing, Tremaine Brock playing, and no concerns at all with Jordan Hicks, although he missed practice yesterday, no concern at all. So I think that's good news, is that they're going to have some of their key players ready for this game.
Couple of questionable guys to look at, though. Suggs listed as questionable. Hassan Reddick listed as questionable for this game as well. Damir Bird, Zach Allen listed as questionable. But our top story of the day, of course, is the Cardinals getting ready for the Atlanta Falcons with this injury report in the back of our mind, and yet another opportunity for Kyler Murray to show what he's all about going into his sixth NFL game. The praise continues to be heaped on him. Deion Jones, linebacker for the Atlanta Falcons.
I don't think there's any like him.
Why?
He's fast. He's a little shorter, but you know, he moves around a lot, and he got a lot of movement plays where he's the guy with the ball, and you know, just something you got to account for.
Jeff Ulbrich is the linebackers coach for the Falcons.
Ultimately, you have this quarterback that is a serious pain in the butt. You know, he's as athletic as I've ever seen at the quarterback position, and he can throw the ball. So it's a great challenge.
You're going to hear praise. I always wonder, is it legit? Is it real praise or not? Now, with Deion Jones, he might be the guy that has to spy on Kyler Murray in this game. So he might be like, yeah. And a lot easier to sit back there and play a quarterback who's not going to run, and you don't have to worry about him taking off. The Cardinals are doing a really good job. I'm looking at about four or five design runs per game is what I'm seeing on the game film. About four or five design runs per game for Kyler Murray, in which four or five plays in which they're, okay, he's going to run the ball. Like, that's the plan, is for him to run the ball. And they've done a really good job, Cliff has, of spacing it out, getting those inside linebackers to turn towards the outside in coverage, and giving Kyler Murray that angle, that running lane to get through. So he makes it very difficult, which is why now if a team now has to put a spy on him because you're so worried about him, it does give him more opportunities in the passing game.
No doubt.
Because you've got a spy who's got to be worried about where you're going to go. So Murray's done a really good job. This will be I don't want to say this is a good test for him, because it's not. The defense is, this is not a good defense. But this is the game where maybe he actually goes out there and throws a couple of big touchdown passes and gets back to some of those big 40-yard plays.
I think that's what makes this a good test for Kyler Murray, in the sense that okay, you're getting better every week. We can see it. We can all watch it in your development. You're just doing things a little bit better every single week so far in this league. How well prepared are you to take advantage of a defense that, quite frankly, isn't very good? That didn't get any pressure on Deshaun Watson a week ago, that gives up third downs like it's their job, that gives up yards and points like it's their job. How adequately prepared are you as the number one pick to take advantage of a defense that, I mean, let's call it like it is. The Cardinals are going to need to score some points in this game if they're going to win. Is Kyler Murray, that's been the struggle for them. They've moved the ball fantastically. His numbers are eye-popping statistically. Their red zone struggles and their inability to convert those yards into points has been the one thing dragging this team down offensively. You can't do that against Atlanta. You got to be prepared to turn those yards into points. I think this is a good test for Kyler Murray to see if he can take advantage of a defense that, quite frankly, he should be able to take advantage of.
You know, I'm not playing fantasy football this year, but all the fantasy football stories are start Kyler Murray, start Kyler Murray, start Kyler Murray.
Look at what Deshaun Watson did last weekend, and that's the crux of those stories.
And I'm telling you, they're similar. I know. Listen, everybody compares Kyler Murray to Russell Wilson, and that is the main comp that was used when they drafted him. But the second comp was Deshaun Watson. Even though Deshaun's taller, that was the second comp. It was Deshaun Watson. So Atlanta does get to face a similar type quarterback, and they are similar in some ways. But Kyler's arm strength and accuracy, and if the big play down the field, you know, you want to see if that's going to pop. But I look, so listen, obviously you got to score points to win the game, but this is a matter of, you know, this, you're going to get six trips into the red zone. You got to go get four touchdowns. Yeah. You can't come away with one or two touchdowns.
Cliff Kingsbury has gone on record saying Andy Isabella's issues are on the head coach. Steve Keim this morning had a slightly different take on the Cardinals rookie wide receiver. You'll hear what he had to say about it coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show. Live from the Oxygen Community Studios, thanks for hanging out with us on this Friday afternoon here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Of course, every Friday morning, Steve Keim, the general manager of the Arizona Cardinals, makes his weekly appearance with Doug and Wolf. And we get the pleasure of kind of listening to what he said and talking about it a little bit. And obviously, and with the, we talked about this earlier in the week. It's probably bordering now a little bit almost almost obsessive, this thing about Andy Isabella, right? Like it's
here locally. I don't think nationally anybody cares. But locally, it's like, yeah, sure. Second round, he's a second round pick. He's a second round pick.
Oh, yeah. I wasn't nationally. I don't think anybody cares, but locally, yeah. So it's kind of turned into this. Well, it's obsession. Man, he's a second round pick. What the hell's going on with Andy Isabella?
Right.
He's not getting any targets. He makes a great decoy in the run game. You know, the jet sweeps, and a couple times he's picking up some yards. And
let me put it this way. I'm just gonna try to see if I could focus on this. Last year, if Christian Kirk had gone five games without playing, and with no targets for Christian Kirk, we might have lost our damn minds. No, I'm serious.
No, I'm
Christian Kirk was their second round pick last year.
In life, we laugh at things because they're funny, or we laugh at things because they're true.
Right.
I'm laughing because this one's true.
Can you imagine? I'm just trying to take a different approach to how we're looking at Andy Isabella. Andy Isabella was a second round pick. Christian Kirk was a second round pick. Christian Kirk played right away, had an impact with this team, had a really good year. Really good year. To the point where everybody thought that he could lead the Cardinals in receiving this year. Got hurt last year, and it was a bummer, right? Because he was good. Can you imagine if we were five games into last year and Christian Kirk
hadn't been targeted one time? Nope.
Because that's, I mean, honestly, in some ways, isn't that what we're talking about? I mean, Andy Isabella is the second round pick. He's a wide receiver, and he hasn't been targeted.
Yes, that's exactly what we're talking about. And it would have been, the problem would be even further exacerbated if Byron Murphy wasn't playing as well as he had so far this year, too, right? I mean, if Andy Isabella was the only second round pick for the Arizona Cardinals this year, we'd be losing our damn minds over the fact that he hasn't been targeted one time.
Okay, here's Christian Kirk last year's first five games.
Okay.
One catch for 4 yards, four catches for 27 yards, seven catches for 90 yards, four catches for 28 yards, three catches for 85 yards and a touchdown. Those were his first five games. Like, if Andy Isabella's doing that, I mean, we're not saying a word. Like, okay, 85 yards, 90 yards, touchdown, seven catches in one game. I mean, he had a total of 10, 14, 19 catches in his first five games. 19 catches.
Mm-hmm.
So he's averaging about four catches a game. So, If he had not played, we literally might have lost our collective minds. Like,
sure.
He's your second round pick.
Sure.
What is wrong with Christian Kirk if he's not playing? Can't we just look at it the same way with Isabella? Same thing. Second round pick, wide receiver. Like, the fact that he's not playing and not being targeted, that's why we talk about it so much. Because we know, we've been around this game long enough. Second round picks play. They play.
Yes.
Now, he's taking longer to develop. I still think he's going to be good. He's just taking longer to develop.
But we've also been around this game long enough to know as well that rookie wide receivers, sometimes it takes them a while. And not
most of the time.
At that position, it is difficult to come into this league and make a real impact right away. But to your point about Kirk didn't make a real impact right away. He put up good numbers, but it wasn't like he was, oh my God, jaw-droppingly, look at this guy's next Anquan Boldin.
Nobody played and he contributed.
But he contributed. He contributed. Steve Keim this morning on Doug and Wolf. What does he think is holding Andy Isabella back? Because what we've heard from Cliff Kingsbury is, well, we've kind of stunted his growth. We've moved him inside. We've moved him outside. We haven't really gotten him a chance to become centered on one spot. That's not exactly how Steve saw it.
Well, I mean, personally, I think, some of it's it's on him in terms of becoming a better route runner, becoming more consistent catching the football, but at the same time, you know, opportunity. And, you know, being from a small school, he's continuing to grow. I think the stat I saw that I forgot about was, I don't think Larry Fitzgerald caught a touchdown until October. And, you know, being the third pick overall, you would hope that's a little bit earlier. But he's had a pretty good career. And I'm not comparing those two by any means, but, you know, Andy has done some good things that I've seen not only on tape but in practice.
But being a better route runner, your hands, being a better receiver. I don't think it's all that unfair to surmise that the reason why Andy Isabella doesn't have a target yet in a game is that based off of what they've seen in practice, he has not earned the opportunity to have a target yet. They don't trust him.
Well, Steve Keim used Larry Fitzgerald's rookie season as an example.
Yeah.
And with you mentioning targets, Fitzgerald's first game ever as an NFL player, 8 targets, 4 receptions. His second game, 12 targets, 5 receptions. Third, 6 targets, 5. So he may not have scored a touchdown.
He might not have put up numbers, but boy, they were throwing it
absolutely
to him. They were throwing it to him. They're not even throwing it to Andy Isabella. They're not even throwing it to him.
And I think it just comes down to he has to, and he is working really, really hard from what I'm hearing. Really, he's a hardworking kid, and he's going to earn that time. But he's got to run better routes and he's got to catch the ball.
Yeah.
Now, he had, if you go back and you look at his days in UMass, I mean, 102 catches last year for 1,698 yards. You don't have 102 catches by not being able to catch the ball. He was able to catch the ball. Maybe the route running is more of an issue because you got to be more precise in the NFL than you do in college with your route running. So that could be it. I think, and we keep saying this, but I mean, I would bet that he'll be targeted more than once in this game this week. I would bet that he'll be targeted more than once.
Yeah, you're right.
He will be.
I won't bet you on that, but there's something about this.
I probably would have took that bet last week, too,
probably
and I would have been wrong.
And that's what I was about to say.
Yeah.
I mean, we thought going into the Cincinnati game that would be the moment. Now you have presumably Kirk back and Bird back.
Right.
I don't know if he will get targeted.
You know what? And that's, boy, look at you. Jordan is like the devil on one shoulder, and you're the angel on one shoulder. I'm trying to figure out whether I want to make a bet with you on this one.
I get to be the angel.
You know, yeah, I got Jordan on one side going, but Bird's back and Kirk's back, and I got you going, oh, come on, he'll get a target. Of course he'll get a target.
You just think that at some point it's going to change, right? At some point he's going to get targeted.
Should I bet Gamble on this? Should I bet Gamble on whether he gets a target or not?
I think he'll get targeted this week. I don't think he's, and look, they already used him a couple of running plays. Now, can you imagine just swinging the ball out to him and let him catch it and see what he can do at that speed?
Yeah, I don't know what it is. I know what Steve Keim referenced. There's obviously something in practice that he still needs to work on before they trust him in those moments. And maybe he's done enough to show it, but Steve Keim mentioned the route running. He mentioned the catching in the hands. Of course, there's also the DK Metcalf comp. And I know the Cardinals weren't interested in DK Metcalf, but he was picked after Andy Isabella, and he's putting up decent numbers. And Steve Keim was kind of asked about that today.
Yeah, I mean, I think in the evaluation process, and I can't talk about DK, but there's a number of things that goes into making the selection, and that's all the information you have on players' backgrounds when it comes to medical, when it comes to off-field work ethic, when it comes to the ability to run multiple routes in the route tree. I mean, there's so many things that go into it. Production throughout their careers, and when you watched Andy Isabella coming out, he played at a high level against big teams, you know, Georgia and other Division I-A teams in the SEC. So, you know, we're comfortable with him, and again, we just got to get him more involved, and I think over the next several weeks, you'll see a little more of him.
Over the next several weeks, you'll see. So it's a gradual. So basically, they've got a plan for him. And they needed more practice time and more reps, and they needed him to work harder, and then they're gradually going to start to bring him into the game. And then you'll probably see the targets go up. And now he's not going to have a Christian Kirk type year, but he's going to get some balls thrown to him. He's going to make some catches. And now when he has that first big game, then who knows? Maybe that's it. Then he's off
maybe
to the races
pops
from
the
there.
Top
yeah.
and everything's
maybe
okay.
That does it.
A trend has developed from the first round of the baseball playoffs. But if you're the Astros and Gerrit Cole, you don't need to worry about it. We'll explain why next on the Burns and Gambo Show. Let's update our Twitter poll question of the day. Sarah Cazell is standing by with the latest on that poll question right now.
Burns and Gambo Need to Know Twitter Poll Update, presented by Sanderson Ford.
Still can't believe I answered this question the way I did. I'm kind of ashamed of myself.
Oh, I love it.
But I had to
be honest.
I hope
you're right.
I had to be honest. It's just the little voice inside my head is saying, don't look back, don't ever look back. It's asking me to pick the Yankees is what it's doing. What's the question today?
All right, guys. Who wins the World Series? Four teams left. Who wins? Is it the Astros, the Yankees, the Cardinals, or the Nats?
That is weird.
The Astros are the money favorite.
Oh, well, easy.
Sure. I mean, easily.
Yeah, easy.
Whoever comes out of the American League should win it, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Astros or Yankees?
Yes.
I think if the Yankees win game one against Granky, then they're going to win. If they lose game one, then they're going to lose. I really believe that.
So you think the game one winner
absolutely wins this series?
Okay. Ooh,
yeah, because then if you lose game one to Greinke, then you got to go beat Verlander and Cole.
That's a good juicy take right there. I hadn't thought of it that way.
Totally, because of who they're pitching.
I have this weird feeling it's going to be the Yankees. So I'm not saying that's what I want to happen. So certainly, Gambo, do not interpret this as me wanting this to happen. But I have a weird feeling it's going to. So I'm going to say the Yankees too.
Okay, well, Gambo, to your point about whoever wins the AL going on to or the LCS, rather, going on to win the whole thing. Our top two vote getters, the Astros and the Yankees, 55% for Houston, 20% for New York, only 15% for Goldie and the Cardinals, 9% for the Nats.
Hmm. Yeah, sounds about right.
I think the Nats beat the Cardinals.
Okay.
Wait a minute. I think you picked the Cardinals to go to the
I did because
World
I thought
Series.
The Cardinals were the team that was going to beat the Dodgers.
Okay.
I guess I got to stick with my pick.
Do you want the Nationals to beat the Cardinals because you think they'll be easier to take down? You know,
no, I think whoever comes out is going to lose to the American League team.
Okay.
But I picked the Cardinals based on who could beat the Dodgers, and I thought the Cardinals had the best chance of beating the Dodgers.
I was laughing because our intern on the other side of the glass, Sarah, as soon as you said that, he was nodding his head like, yep, that's why he thinks the Nationals are going to win, because he wants the Nationals to win, so the Yankees can beat the Nationals because he thinks that's more likely to happen.
Well, no, the Nationals pose a... The Nationals have better starting pitching than the Cardinals.
The Nationals scare the...
Yeah. I was looking at an MLB.com piece today, and they did... I love when they do these. I really do like who has the edge position by position, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they go through it, and I'll just go down. You know, catcher, obviously, with Yadier Molina over Suzuki, they give the edge to the Cardinals. At first base, yeah, I mean, Paul Goldschmidt, yeah, it's not even close. Against Kendrick, Cardinals get the edge. Second base, yeah, I'm just going to go through them. Cardinals get the edge at second. Nationals get the edge at short. Nationals get the edge at third. Nationals get the edge in left field. Nationals get the edge in center field. Cardinals get the edge in right field. Then they get to pitching. Starting pitching. Big advantage for the Nationals. Big advantage. Just with Scherzer and Strasburg and Corbin, it's been their strength all year. And they, you know... And they just, and then Flaherty's not going to be available until game three.
Right.
So your best pitcher is not available to game three. And so they give a big advantage to the Nationals in starting pitching.
There was the ESPN writers all got together. This was really good stuff. I spent a lot of time on this morning because there were just a lot of good little nuggets in here. And one of the things that they talked about was, okay, what have we seen so far out of the baseball postseason? And there were two observations that really stood out to me. And one of them, I think, kind of applies to the next round a little bit. And the first one was from Buster Olney, in which he said, look, the idea of using your starter as a reliever is not new, okay? We've seen it done in the World Series. We've seen it done in the League Championship Series. Because I can't recall a postseason where managers are already doing it now.
Blake Snell, Patrick Corbin.
In the divisional series. Scherzer, Strasburg.
Clayton Kershaw.
I mean, just go. I mean, look at all the starters that pitched in relief. I mean, the Nationals in particular, man, they're going to have to trust their bullpen at some point. Look at what St. Louis did. Look at the pitch counts from some of their starters in that series against the Braves. When Wainwright threw nearly 120, the numbers just piled up in a big hurry. At some point, you're going to have to trust the guys in your bullpen to get some outs, because you would think these starters, you can't use them like that and not think there are going to be some consequences down the road where fatigue is going to set in.
It's not their norm. You're taking him out of their norm. Corbin got rocked in one game. Kershaw got rocked in a game. Like, it's like, It's like they're better pitchers. They're making a lot more money.
Sure.
But it's not what they do.
Which is why, in a crazy way, maybe that's why that little voice inside my head is telling me to pick the New York Yankees, because their pitching staff is wired to do that this time
right.
of year.
Okay, it's like
as opposed to starters who you bringing them back every 2 days to throw them in short relief and then asking them to start a couple days later. That's hard. And every team is doing that except for the Yankees.
I got an analogy. It'd be like the station asking you to go do the updates for Sarah. Like, you do the update. We're going to have you do the update. Mm-hmm. This update's so important. We're going to have you do it. You know, that's not your role.
Right.
That's her role. She's good at her role.
You're talking about me doing the update.
You have to do the update.
And hosting the show at the same time?
No. Look, you can host the show today, but tomorrow, halfway through the show, we're going to have you come in. All the corporate guys are in town. They're all listening. We need you to do the update.
That's what that would be like.
I mean, it's kind of like this. Kind of makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not bad, Andrew. Jordan, that's not bad, right? Analogy? It's not
too bad.
Yeah, be like,
not your best, not your worst, in all honesty.
Somewhere in the middle. I'm saying, like, okay, like, they're just taking you and they're going to have you do the update. Because,
sure.
But it's not the role that you're used to doing.
And the difference with being a major league pitcher is at some point, that fatigue of that is gonna come into play. That was only observation number one. This was an interesting observation from a couple of the other writers, Sam Miller and Brad Doolittle. They both noted that a lot of balls that got hit that they thought in the regular season would have gone out of the park died at the warning track. And they both openly speculated, do you think Major League Baseball is using a different ball? Do you think Major League Baseball is using a ball that is less inclined to fly out this time of year?
The pitching just better.
The conspiracy. The mystery. Rob Manfred and his lieutenant sneak into the vault where the balls are kept, and they secretly exchange the racket balls that were used during the regular season in exchange for 8-pound rocks for the postseason. Next on the X-Files.
I mean, maybe, but then I watched Kershaw give up 2 home runs, and then Kelly give up a grand slam. I saw 3 home runs in, like, 2 innings in that game. So,
there was a Dodgers player. Was it Seager? Was it Muncy? There was somebody in that series who hit one, and off the bat, I thought it was gone. I thought it was gone, and it died on the track. Now, that happens, but to have two writers make that observation just made, they both noticed the same thing. Man, a lot of balls are dying on the tracks. So I wonder if there's something, going on there with that. I don't know.
Maybe it's the pitching. The pitching's just better. We're in the playoffs now.
Perhaps.
The pitching's better.
But, and to the point of the whole exercise of this, Gerrit Cole, he's the one guy that he's been so good, they haven't needed to have their starters. But I do think you're right about Greinke. I think the key to that whole American League Championship Series is game one, and just the fact that Zach Greinke's going to have to pitch in 2 of the first 5 games. That's got to make you a little... Now, if the series goes back to Houston...
Verlander, game 6,
and you got Verlander
game
6,
seven.
Cole game 7, that's going
to
be...
Isn't that what happened the last time the Yankees played the Astros? They had the lead and they went back to Houston for 2?
I believe so.
I believe that's what happened.
I believe that. And that was 2 years ago. That was an all-time great ALCS series between those two. And I think you're absolutely right. They went back there and they just could not contend with the starters
there's
that Houston was rolling out
advantage
there.
I don't know why, but there's such an advantage for the Astros in that building.
There is.
What's it called? Minute Maid Park?
Correct. Yes.
Yeah, Minute Maid Park. Yeah, that's, you know, that's the thing. I'm looking it up now, but game 6... The Astros won 7-1. In game 7, they won 4-0. So the Yankees were up 3-2. Then they lost to Verlander, and then they lost to Charlie Morton.
Mm-hmm.
So the Yankees lost 7-1 in game 6, and they lost 4-0 in game 2. So they had the 3-2 lead going back. And you don't, so that's just the one scenario that you don't want, is you don't want to go Verlander game 6, Cole game 7.
So Zach Greinke, you could argue,
you gotta win both.
Is the key to this series for the Houston
you gotta
Astros.
You got to win those 2 games. I mean, just to avoid, I mean, how do you, to avoid Verlander in game 6, you got to win this thing in 5.
Yeah, which that's a, you still have to face Verlander in 2 and Cole in 3. That's a big ask. You're not winning the series in 5 games if you're the Yankees, but can you make a dent by getting to Zach Greinke in those 2? Zach Greinke's probably the key player of this whole series.
Oh, I totally agree.
I think that's the takeaway here. Join Kevin McCabe and AZ Preps Live tomorrow morning, 9 to 11, the Chick-fil-A off of Peoria Avenue and Metro Center Mall. They're talking high school football, which K-Mac does so well. You're going to have the chance to win free Chick-fil-A for a year, tickets, other prizes. Visit the events page at ArizonaSports.com for all the details on the Chick-fil-A High School Football Roadshow Series. Washington State coming to Tempe as a team with some issues tomorrow. Could ASU deliver the blow that ultimately breaks the Cougs? That's coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show. It's too bad we don't have like a stat of the day here on the Burns and Gambo Show, because if we did, this would be that. We were talking about Zach Greinke a moment ago, how he's the key player in the American League Championship Series. Bob Nightingale, tweet, Zach Greinke is remarkably consistent. His press conference lasted 67 words before Game 3 in Tampa. It lasted 68 words today before Game 1 in Houston.
I showed you the video. You just like slouch back in the chair. But listen, I mean, that's... I
feel bad for him.
He's very uncomfortable in that environment. And this is not like, he's not trying to be a jerk like other guys are at a press conference. He's uncomfortable. Can't look people in the eye. Can't do, you know how many times I've been in that clubhouse and, you know, you go, it's like, you know, you're going to go talk to Zach Greinke. It's a waste. I mean, he stares at the ground. He's very uncomfortable. He doesn't like having people around him. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't, can't look anybody in the eye. Like, you ask him a question, he can't look you in the eye. He can't say, he just looks at the ground, stares, and answers the question. So it's a very, it's difficult, but he has, you know, he has the anxiety. So, yeah, I mean, I feel bad for him, too. But he slouches down in the chair, and he just wants, I just want this to be over with. He has to do it, right? He has to do it. And I think what the 68 seconds shows, and I'll give credit to the
68
media.
68 words.
68 words. 68 words. I'll give credit to the media here. They know that that's not what he's not going to give you anything.
They're not going to prolong the agony.
Don't prolong the agony.
Silly questions.
Don't keep him up there for 5 minutes, man. So I give the media credit. This is not a guy that's comfortable up there. He doesn't want to be there. You're not going to get anything out of him. It makes him very, very nervous and anxious. And it's just better to just, you know, just ask a question too. Okay, we did it. Now we did our part. He did his part. Okay, let him go.
Yeah.
Just let him go, please. And that's what the media is like. If the media wanted to keep him for longer, they could have, or just keep asking him questions, but he doesn't, he's not comfortable there.
Very well said. And I think in saying it, you used more than 68 words to do it.
Pretty sure you
used 68 words to do it. Washington State is coming to Tempe. Big game for ASU tomorrow afternoon at 12:30. ASU, on the surface, this is a very clear matchup to look at. Washington State's got one of the best scoring offenses in the nation. ASU has one of the best scoring defenses in the nation. Washington State is 0-2 in the Pac-12, coming off a game where Utah actually held that offense in check. And today, actually earlier this week, I should say, Mike Leach, the coach of Washington State, was asked if when he looks at ASU's defense, given their statistical numbers this year, does it kind of remind you of Utah?
I don't know. I mean, I could make something up, but not really. They're a little different than that. You know, they feel good about their defensive line. They do play off you, but then in certain situations, they're very aggressive. They play man. They blitz more than Utah does.
I would have loved to say, just what would it be like if you would make something up? Well, they're really good at stopping the run. They've got some good defensive backs. They're a very well-coached unit. If you watch them play, they'll get some pressure on the quarterback. I mean, kind of just like just some basic stuff. I mean, he could have made it up.
No, if he made something up, he would have reverted back to Mike Leach of a couple weeks ago when he started predicting who would win in the battle. The mystic powers of the Sun Devil, right? Was that the phrase he used? The mystic power.
Who knows about the mystic power?
The Sun Devils have the mystic powers. How would you stop them?
A Sun Devil?
Was that the phrase that he used?
First of all, what kind of mythical powers does a Sun Devil have? We've got to consider that.
Mythical powers.
And he referenced, you know, you need to bring in a Harry Potter expert to figure that out, right?
Yeah, that's it. So who knows what he would have come up with if you had asked him to actually make something up. But thank you for giving us the honest answer and going, no, not really.
Here's the difference, and it's hard to, you know, unless you watch the game or you know anything about the Utah win against Washington State. It was, they had 13 points at halftime, and they didn't really get the ball in the second half. You know, so that's part of it. I mean, yes, Utah did a very good job of shutting them down. But one of the reasons they shut them down is because Utah got the ball at the end, at the start of the half, second half. They drove down the field, they hit a field goal. Then they forced Gordon to throw an interception. Then they drove down the field and they got a touchdown. They ran 25 of the first 28 plays in the second half. So why didn't Washington State score more points?
Keep away.
Yeah. So what Washington, they made one mistake. Gordon threw the interception, and Utah ran 25 out of 28 plays and used the clock, and they're like, basically, the second half was over. They didn't get the ball.
Yeah.
So it was like, okay, so if you want it to be similar, it's like, I would have said, like, we didn't have the ball in the second half. If Arizona State keeps the ball away from us, and we turn it over, and they keep the ball, and there's nothing we could do, and that's what happened. Now, Utah did outgain them. They, you know, Washington State only had 313 yards.
That's amazing when you consider.
But you didn't have the ball.
Yeah.
I mean, part of it, you got to remember, part of it is you didn't have the ball.
I was just going to say, considering their numbers that they've put up so far this season, that is remarkable that they only had 300.
Utah had 526 yards in that game. So they were able to control the ball.
Yeah.
They ran it well. They passed it well. Huntley had a good game. He ran for like 31 yards. He threw for 330 yards. But the game dictated that Utah was controlling the ball and Washington State couldn't get it.
Washington State's in a real funky spot right now. They're coming off the bye week just like ASU. They're 0-2 in conference. They just gave up 67 to UCLA 3 weeks ago. 2 weeks ago, they saw their high-powered offense stymied by Utah. Their defensive coordinator a week ago today resigned. The coach, who is, you know, want to say some things that are a little unconventional, I think that's putting it mildly, called his players fat, dumb, and entitled after they lost to Utah.
He's going to replace that song, Young, Dumb, and Stupid. Broke.
Oh, Young, Dumb, and Broke. Yeah, Young, Dumb, and Broke.
He's going to replace
Fat, Dumb, and Entitled.
They're fat, dumb, and happy, and entitled.
Oh, I forgot about happy, too. They're not happy after hearing their coach say that. And look, coaches are going to say stuff about their players. I'm not saying all coaches should be all nice and, you know, Mr. Rogers when it comes to their players. But you go calling out guys like that to the media, that's not going to go over well. You got something to say, you don't go say it in front of a room full of reporters, right? Save it for the team meeting or the one-on-one if you think I'm fat, dumb, happy, and entitled. So
he's trying to get his message.
Of course,
he knows what he's to be done. Coach for a long time.
But there are
not
some
stupid. He knows what he's doing.
There are some people who took that as, oh man, that's not cool. That's not cool to call your players fat, dumb, happy, and entitled in front of the media. Say it's the team, but not in front of a bunch of
reporters.
Well,
the defensive coordinator resigned.
Yes.
But is that because of that? Or because they gave up 105 points in two games with him as the DC?
He said it didn't have anything to do with that, that it was just a difference in philosophies, I think was basically what he said. But I guess the overarching point here is here's a Washington State team that might be teetering on the edge of being broken, right? You got a coach who's kind of known to shoot his mouth off, and he's shooting it off again. You got a defensive coordinator who walked away. You got a team that's opened up with back-to-back losses in conference. And you've got an ASU team that's ranked, that has been, as we talked about all week long, living on the edge all year. Man, they're winning these games, but they're doing it by the hair on their chinny chin chin. It's been close to nip and tuck all year. And if ASU can drive that nail into that coffin this weekend, that Washington State team, they might be on the verge of,
sure,
of breaking this weekend. Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, listen, if his team is, like Arizona State's a pretty tough team. They're a pretty tough team. And if Washington State is a soft team, then, and listen, I like the game time for ASU, because,
yep,
you know what, it's snowing. It snowed in Pullman this week, believe it or not. It snowed. They're going to come here. It's going to be 90 degrees in the middle of the day, and they're going to have to go play ASU. It's not 100 or 110, I get it, but it's still 90 degrees outside, and they're going to go play with pads on and helmets, and it's not a night game. I think that bodes well, but it's two different teams. I mean, Washington State's averaging 45 points a game. You know, and ASU, you know, it has a good defense. They don't give up a lot of points. I mean, something's got to break. I think if Washington State scores, I don't know, 33 or more, I think they've got a good chance to win. If they don't, I think ASU will win.
The Arizona Cardinals have had to use a lot of youth and inexperience in their secondary so far this season. All of that changes after Sunday's game. We'll explain why, but I think you know why. Next on the Burns and Gambo Show.
You'd have to get one of those Harry Potter activists to read up on how you kill a sun devil, because there's a lot of outside stuff there.